यहाँ भगवान पितृराज वैवस्वता स्वा विषय थापितेषु सपुरुषेण जंतुषु संभारथेषु यथा परमा वाद्यम दुषम दिवानुलंबित भगवत शासन संगनो धमम भागवती. Translation. The king of the Pitas is Yamaraj, the very powerful son of the sun god. He resides in Pitriloka with his personal assistants, and while abiding by the rules and regulations set down by the Supreme Lord, has his agents, the Yamabuddhas, bring all the sinful men to him immediately upon their death. After bringing them within his jurisdiction, he properly judges them according to their specific sinful activities, and sends them to one of the many hellish planets for suitable punishments. Purport. Yamaraj is not a fictitious or mythological character. He has his own abode, Pitriloka, of which he is the king. Agnostics may not believe in hell, but Sukadev Goswami affirms the existence of the Narka planets, which lie between the Garbhodak ocean and Patala Loka. Yamaraj is appointed by the Supreme Personality Godhead to see that the human beings do not violate his rules and regulations. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4.17, Karamano yami bodhavyam, bodhavyam chavi karamana, akaramanascha bodhavyam, gahana karamano gati. The intricacies of action are very hard to understand. Therefore, one should know properly what action is, what forbidden action is, and what inaction is. One should understand the nature of karma, nikarma, and akarma, and one must act accordingly. This is the law of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The conditioned souls who have come to this material world for sense gratification are allowed to enjoy their senses under certain regulative principles. If they violate these regulations, they are judged and punished by Yamaraj. Brings them to the hellish planets and properly chastises them to bring them back to Krishna consciousness. By the influence of Maya, however, the conditioned souls remain infatuated with the mode of ignorance. Thus, in spite of repeated punishment by Yamaraj, they do not come to their senses, but continue to live within the material condition, committing sinful activities again and again. Now, Sukadev Goswami wanted to know why the living entities are put into their different conditions of life. What is the cause of this? So then Sukadev Goswami is then explaining behind this, then we have Yamaraj. And this Yamaraj, it is his duty to see that everybody gets the situation that they deserve, both pious and impious. So in this situation now we're discussing the impious side of it. That Krishna has made rules for the human being. Because the human being is conscious and he can be conscious beyond himself. Other living entities are not conscious beyond their own needs. Just whatever is the emotional or sensual desires that come up, they just deal with that. But they cannot actually factually understand what it is like for others. An animal who goes and kills another animal for food doesn't understand what that other animal is suffering. So the animals are not subject to this karma or this reaction. They do not get sinful reactions. And the demigods, they are living out their different activities according to the fruits that they gained as human beings. So they're situated in the lifestyle of the mode of goodness and that. But if they also break the Lord's rules, they can fall from their position. Because they're in that position because of pious activities. So if they give up pious activities, they can fall from that position. As we see many times Indra is falling. He does something foolish and then he gets removed from his throne. When he understands what he's doing wrong or is atoned for that, then he goes back to his place. So this judgment that Yamaraj gives is specifically for the human beings, specifically for those on this planet, this mandala. Because here, one knows what the rules of the Lord is, and one can follow them. One has that option. And if one takes it, then very nice. And if not, then Yamaraj is there to correct such improper behavior. So there must be discipline. There must be authority. Krishna is the supreme authority. So this principle must be reflected here in the material world. That if we're going to accept the supreme authority, Krishna, we also have to accept the authority of the Lord represented in the material world through his various leaders, through the demigods, through the rules and regulations, through the different leaders on this planet, you know, both social and religious. These must all be followed. So someone who doesn't follow, then they have difficulty. So in the material world, the reason someone is here is to enjoy the senses. That's specifically why one would come. Right? No one, knowing the supreme personality of Godhead, would then choose to go to the Brahman. Right? Because that is also the spiritual. You wouldn't take a lower spiritual nature when you know what is the highest spiritual nature. But because of the desire to enjoy separately from Krishna, then we end up in the material consciousness, the material sphere. So that is the purpose. Then after being frustrated with that, one may go for jnana. But the reason that every living entity comes into the material sphere is they want to enjoy the senses. So then if one wants to enjoy the senses, then Krishna will allow that. But according to regulation, you don't follow the spiritual rules of reciprocating with Krishna in love, then, okay, then you follow Krishna's indirect path of following his order. So he gives the order for how to properly perform one's activities in this material world, and that is called karma. And then when one wants to remove himself from this material world, then he gives the paths of jnana and yoga. And in this way, the living entity can then remove himself from this material contamination. But it's all through Krishna's path, Krishna's direction, Krishna's order. So then, this means that we are worshipping Krishna, but indirectly. So those who refuse to do this, they won't worship Krishna directly in spiritual relationship. They won't worship Krishna indirectly by following his order. Then there must be some punishment for such a person. Because the whole idea is to bring him to the Krishna conscious platform. Ideally to the point of understanding the material nature is not worth the endeavor. And one should take up the spiritual consciousness, the spiritual endeavor. But at least bring one to the point of piety in that they follow Krishna's order, sacrifice, though it's indirect. So those who won't, then they are punished by Yamaraj. He takes them and he judges them. And he judges them according to the Lord's rule. This is also important. Someone has broken the Lord's rule, now you don't judge them by something that is also not the Lord's rule. Someone has acted improperly, you don't judge from the platform of improperness. But you still judge from the platform of properness. So Krishna's rule is the scale by which we judge also punishment. Reward and punishment is all judged by Krishna's direction. So those who are in platform positions of responsibility, whether for individuals, for families, for communities, nations, or the world, or like Brahma, the universe. But one must follow Krishna's instructions in taking care of others and in properly giving them the results of their work. So now, again, otherwise if not, then it is not the proper, the example is not being followed. Yamaraj is the judge for the universe, and that's how he does it. So this is the proper example is being given by him. So this is how we must judge. Standards must be Krishna's standards. Even if someone deviates, still Krishna's standards are used to see how to apply what they have done wrong. Because Krishna knows what is the consciousness that created that improper activity. So he knows what is the punishment that will correct that consciousness. Therefore, Yamaraj is very careful in his judgments and weighs everything very, very carefully, then makes his opinion. And that opinion is based on Krishna's direction. So thus it is not opinion, but it is following the Shastras. Then that punishment will give the living entity the opportunity to take up Krishna consciousness. Because they've been purified from that activity and they've been corrected in their mentality. But we see that here it's mentioned that the living entity, because of his being infatuated with the mode of ignorance, he still doesn't take advantage of this opportunity. Though he's being given now the correct opportunity, he has the correct viewpoint to look at the situation and to make a proper judgment. But because of ignorance, he doesn't. Just like we see Dhritarashtra, he knows Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can glorify Krishna very nicely. But because of his attachment to ignorance, his bodily attachment to his son, he cannot apply it in his life. Therefore, then again, so much difficulty. So like that, this is Yamaraja's purpose. Now, here then Prabhupada points out that the human being is meant to understand three things. That is, what is karma? One should understand the nature of karma, vikarma, and akarma, and one must act accordingly. So karma means those things which are done which are according to Krishna's rules and regulations. And by following those things, then one is elevated, though materially. Then vikarma means those things that are improper activity. By performing those, then Yamaraj is going to have to give judgment and punishment. Those things which go against the scriptures. And then akarma means that which is, there is no karma. Those activities which are performed for the Lord's satisfaction. So when the living entity understands that going through this cycle of birth and death, of following the pious activities, getting entangled in impious activities, we just go around and around in circles. One day we're prosperous, another day we're not. One day we're famous, one day we're not. All this is going on. So when he understands this, the wasted endeavor for such a thing that doesn't give you proper results, what you want to be happy, then by Krishna's grace he comes in contact with the process by which one can be relieved from this cycle. And that is akarma. So Krishna explains this in Bhagavad Gita, that this means performing your activities in a detached manner. Someone must perform activities. If one is already liberated, one doesn't have to worry about that. But as long as one has a conditioned nature, then one must act. And by acting, then one should try to purify himself. That's a human form of life. So this is done by acting with detachment. The rules and regulations must be followed, the Krishna's order, and we do them without attachment. Then by such work, we become purified. We gain knowledge about our position of the world, position of the Supreme Lord, and then we can understand the process of knowledge. We can understand how to actually act with the knowledge and elevate ourselves with this. So this is the platform of akarma. So now within this akarma, now the real position is that of the devotee. One is doing this for Krishna. One is not just doing it just because the material nature is bothering us. That we may start in the beginning when we have minimal knowledge or no knowledge. We have a difficulty, we want to be relieved from the pains and miseries of the material world. So then we take up this process of detached work. But now with time, we start to understand that in this detached work, then this work has been given by someone. And if the all these pains are there of the material nature, this material nature has come from someone. By this detached work, we gain knowledge, understand we're different from the body. And then if we have good association, then we can understand that all this, the body, the soul, the whole cycle of birth and death, all this is coming from the Supreme Lord. Then by understanding that, then we can progress very dynamically as a devotee. So factually, the devotee only can be situated on this platform of akarma, because only they will take this and get out of this, fully out of the cycle of birth and death. Anyone else may, for some temporary time, either for some time in this lifetime or some lifetimes, or even a long time, situated in Brahman realization, but eventually they come back again to karma. So with that definition, one cannot call it actually akarma. It looks like it. One goes through the activities, one goes through the motions of one engaged in akarma. But one is not actually, because one has some purpose, some material purpose. I want to be free from the miseries of the material world. So it's actually a material purpose. Though it is done in knowledge, knowing that we're not the body. So then we take up this path of Brahman realization. But because they don't actually know the full knowledge, they don't know about the Supreme Lord, therefore it can't last, it's not permanent, it's temporary. So the human being who is endeavoring for this kind of understanding, then is the best. Like that. Then Yamaraj does not send them to the hellish planets. And of those who are performing activities like this, Krishna mentions, of all the living entities, very few are engaged in proper activities. Of those, very few are engaged in the pursuit of or endeavor for liberation, which means performing one's activities without desire for result. Of that, very few attain that position. And of that, very few understand Him, Krishna. So the whole point is those who are endeavoring, like Nisway, they never have any problem with Yamaraj sending to the hellish planets. But still, they're within Yamaraj's control. But the devotee who understands that Krishna is at the end, the goal of all these endeavors, then he is not under the grips of Yamaraj. He does not have to see the hellish planets. He is not even, all the arrangements is not being done by him, of next birth, all this. Krishna himself is making these arrangements. So this is the purpose that Yamaraj is trying to bring one to. He's trying to bring you to the point of that, why you get involved in all this, you surrender to the Lord. So someone who does that, then it is very beneficial for them. And someone who doesn't, then there's problems, difficulties, right? As we will see, so many nice hellish planets are there. Sukadev points out, some say 21, some say 28. In any case, one of them is more than enough. Like that, make it like that. Any questions on these points? Yes.
You spoke about working in the detachment. Mm. And then beyond that, to work with attachment to Krishna. But it seems, just thinking about it, that to work without any attachment to the results means more or less lazy type of work. If you have no attachment to the result, and you're not attached to Krishna, then why work? What will motivate you to do the work properly, or to do the work in any sense of real work? Rather, it seems that one with that mood would simply stop working.
Yes.
Now, what does it mean to work with detachment? Without being attached to Krishna?
Yeah.
We have the idea of being detached, meaning that we don't want the results, we want the results of Krishna. But if we don't want any result, there's no idea for them to do the work at all. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good point. So then in taking up this platform of detached work, so there's a great science to it. Basically, except for the middle six chapters of Gita, all the other chapters are dedicated to this understanding. The first six mainly are discussing how one should perform the work, just the performing the duties and the basic, like, mentality, understanding, and all that. And the last six chapters are the actual technical understanding for doing this. So now, detached work can only be done if there's knowledge. So that is the important element. Actually, this karma yoga is done with knowledge. It's very interesting how Krishna has taken in the material world we have three options, karma, jnana, and yoga. And that's basically all we have for performing of activities. We can either be fully endeavoring for fruitive results, or we understand these fruitive results are useless, and then we can endeavor for jnana. Or we can take the process of yoga, where we try to meditate on the Supreme and come to an understanding of the Paramatma. So we're given the chance to endeavor fruitive activities, understand the Brahman platform, or understand the Paramatma platform. So then what Krishna is recommending is that we're so used to these activities, this is all we know, the conditioned state, this is all we can know, really. And only in the purified state can we actually understand spiritual and the spiritual platform and perceive it, and it actually has meaning for us. As you were pointing out, there must be some meaning, otherwise why would one work? You know, there must be something that inspires you to work. So then Krishna uses the example for the system, the principle of taking out a thorn with a thorn. So while we have the conditioned nature, and while we don't have that pure love for Krishna, pure unalloyed love for Krishna, Jai Shri Shri Radha, for Krishna, then we use these methods to attain to the fully transcendental platform where we can worship Krishna with love. So we know how to work. Right? So then Krishna says, no problem, you continue to work. Right? But now, we're always working for our own sense gratification. Now we work knowing that we're not the body, we're the soul, and that we actually have another purpose. But we are not situated now on pure love, we can just do transcendental activities and be fully absorbed, just chanting and all these things. So we do our work according to our nature. But we know that the fruit belongs to Krishna. He's giving the fruit, it belongs to Krishna. And so that is our main endeavor. Then by working in detachment, we become purified of sinful reactions, and we become knowledgeable. We actually gain knowledge, understanding the difference between matter and spirit, and we control them. We actually get that understanding. Then with time, so this is where we're situated within the process of bhakti, where our emphasis is more on the karma act step. But it's still devotion, because we're doing it for Krishna. Then, as we become purified, then the jnana aspect starts becoming a little more prominent. We're doing the activities, but those become just more of habit. And then we see that we're more concentrating on the understanding that I'm not the body, the three modes of nature, carrying it out, and all these things are going on. I'm simply desiring. You know, I want to type. You know, I don't have to think about each key like that. In the beginning, I do. But with time, I don't. So how is that working? So I'm just desiring, I want to type. The modes of nature are doing that. Even I'm concentrating on each thing, I'm not thinking, I'm just thinking, okay, I'll push A with my finger, but I'm not thinking, okay, now this particular synapse within the brain will work and that will make this electricity go down this particular nerve and then move this particular muscle, which will move that tendon and then this thing and then this bone and then the finger pushes. So the modes of nature are still working. Just our focus of our desire is, you know, has to be at one thing at a time. But with time, then Krishna awards that now it happens more readily, just by habit. But it's still the modes of nature carrying it out. So one starts to see more than all the activities are going on, the interactions between bodies and all these different things that are happening, and just the modes are arranging it, but because I'm desiring it. And Krishna's sanctioning it. We want it, he's sanctioning it. So that means he's sitting in the heart, and he's seeing everything, and every moment he's sanctioning. So he's going to such, how do you say, such endeavor, or such, he's spending that time, that for each, every desire you have, he considers that and sanctions it. And then the material nature, with that sanction, the Lord carries it out. So then our concentration goes more to this side, though we're still performing our prescribed duties, but the emphasis is on this. So it's still called Nishkam Karma Yoga, but the emphasis is on Jnana, or Anubhuti. So it's called Jnana Yoga or Buddhi Yoga. It's where one is very much seeing, you know, Krishna and the living entity and the material nature and what's happening. Well, the other is more karma, or it's more on the karmas, you're seeing more the activity. Though you know it's for Krishna, but the technical aspects of it are not so well, it's not so prominent. Then, when one becomes situated more on this, where one very much doesn't identify anymore with the body because of being purified from this work, it means the work continues. So when one comes to the platform of, we just come to the Brahma Bhuta platform, we know we're not the body anymore. It means it's actually realized. We see it very clearly. Then, the process of yoga, the dhyana, where we absorb ourselves in meditating upon the Supreme, always thinking of Him in His personal form, and chanting His holy name becomes the prominent teacher. So for preaching, we'll continue our activities to set proper example. And in this way, then, we come to the platform of attachment. Detachment for Krishna becomes greater and greater, till it transforms into pure love, prema. So we're using these systems, the karma, jnana, and yoga, within bhakti. Or in other words, these are the path of bhakti for the conditioned soul. But the non-devotees can also use them if they want to get their particular material desires. They can follow karma and get fruitive results. They can follow karma without desire for results and get knowledge. They can follow the path of knowledge and come to the Brahman platform. Right? Or they can follow the yoga system and come to understand the Paramatma, but not Bhagavan. Then, if any of these have an association of devotees, they can switch that path into the devotional path and do the same thing for Krishna. So the motivation for the devotee is that he's doing it for Krishna, and the understanding that I have desires, I'm going to do something anyway, as Krishna's point to Arjuna. You're going to go to the forest, fine. But it's still, you're not going to leave your desires behind. So you're still going to act. So you're going to act according to your nature. And when you act according to your nature and get into a fight and all this in the forest, then what's the difference? Fighting in the forest with a few people or fighting with the battlefield. At least this is your dharma. It's a religious war. You've been challenged. It's your duty. Well, if you go away, then it's not your duty. Others will follow your path, they'll become irreligious. And Krishna is saying, I'm doing my duty. I come here, I have no duty to perform, but I do it anyway, to set example. Because if I didn't do, nobody would do. So he's telling Arjuna, even though you are situated on an advanced platform, still you should perform duties to set example. Therefore, even someone on the advanced platform takes the position of the madhyam and performs duties. So then that combination of desire to do it for Krishna and the knowledge that we're not the body, but because we're conditioned, we have desires, they're not fully purified, they will be in connection with the material nature. Therefore, we engage them in Krishna's activities, but from that platform, then this is the platform of Nishkam Karma. But in the beginning, we may find, even that may not be fully situated there. We may still have stronger some desires. So Krishna says, you do that work, you try to do it without attachment, but even if attachment is there, it doesn't matter. You give the result. Best is before I start the work, I know this is Krishna's work, the result is Krishna's, while I'm doing the result, it's Krishna's work and all that. And so there's no need to give the result. No, I don't have to give the result at the end. It's already been given in the beginning. But if not, if that habit isn't developed, then Krishna says, no problem. You do your work. You may think, my work, my abilities, at the end I get my fruit, but I know it's actually the fruit is being given by Krishna. So I give Krishna either all of it or part of it, you know, depending on what the work. Like I do something for a festival. I do that work. I get the fruits of it. I give all that fruit to Krishna. I may be doing my business, I give some of the fruit. Like this. So, like that, then the path can work. And then Krishna says, if you can't even do that, he says, then if we have the interest to hear, by hearing from others, by associating with those who speak about these things, you know, speak Gita, Bhagavatam, and all these, speak the glories of the Lord, and that way we'll be purified. And what we hear from them, we try to do that, and we'll be elevated. So even that person will come to perfection, just by hearing about Krishna and his glories. So like that, that is the basic principle. But that the motivation, an interesting thing comes in here is motivation is cut down if one works without desire for the results, with knowledge, specifically for sense gratification. That is what really gets cut. Because you know it's just the interaction of the modes, the bodies, and it's nothing really to do with me. So then why should I do that? So then that becomes easily left. But those things that are done for service for Krishna, then we want to do that because that will please Krishna. Though it may be for us more theory. You know, it's a theoretical understanding. Krishna is the Lord, I am His servant, I want to please Him. I see the spiritual master, I see God brothers and God sisters, and I read in the Shastras how others have done. So I do it on the theoretical platform. You know? But I have that value, so it has some meaning. But then with time, as you become purified, and that attachment for Krishna becomes more prominent, then it's not so much I'm doing it because I should, because of duty. And it's the proper thing to do and please Krishna in this way. But then it's out of love, you want to please Krishna. Then, you know, these activities are there, we do them for that. So it's just a matter of the theoretical understanding of pleasing Krishna turning into actual realized affection. But for the devotee, even from the beginning, that stage of understanding for Krishna is there. So that is a strong motivating force. Does that make any sense? Or?
I was thinking how the, as you said, in the beginning, before attachment to the Lord develops, then as we work, we naturally are working for some result, but we are asked to be detached, not from the, that there should not be any result.
Mm.
There should be a result, but the result, otherwise why work?
Yeah.
So that, I think that was my
question, okay,
that,
okay.
That detachment from the result doesn't mean that there shouldn't be any result.
Yeah. No, that's a good point.
When we work, we have to work for a result, otherwise there's no point in working.
Yeah.
But we try to see those results, as you said, that the results are actually being given by the Lord, and they belong to the Lord, or as you say, maybe you give as much as you can, depending on that level of detachment. But that sense of detachment is not not to do anything. Why do anything whatsoever? You don't want the result, so don't do anything anyway. But that we actually do work for a result, and we should always be very mindful that those results are. We should work in the spirit of achieving something, and that there should be a result. but it should be offered to the Lord. Mm. And that's the exact spirit of the text.
Yeah, no, that's very good. That's a very good point. Very good. We all understand this, that these Hansharan Prabhu's pointing out is that when we're working for doing our prescribed duties, we are trying to, the duty will create a result. So we try to do the duty in such a way that it creates a good result for Krishna. But the attachment to the actual result, that is not that we're thinking it's for us to enjoy. That is to the degree of our realization is given up. But he's saying that it's not that we don't try to get some good result for Krishna. But yeah. And then with this, with the knowledge, we also understand Krishna being the sanctioner and the modes carrying this out, then how the result comes, that's up to him. So it may not come good today. It may come good tomorrow because we have something to learn. Because in this description also he says you must work without ego. Means thinking that I am the doer. So if we're thinking I am the doer, then sometimes even though we're getting a great result and everything's going, if we think we're the doer, still Krishna will give us trouble. We find others are not satisfied and everything. It's a very common platform. If someone is working very hard, getting very good results, and no one's appreciating, and they're getting very frustrated with this. And they think, you know, what is this? You know, naturally they'll think, I'm materially qualified, and the reason the others don't is because they're not materially qualified, which is many times the situation. They're a good manager, good at whatever their particular field is, no one appreciates. So they just figure it's like, you know, showing a painting to someone who doesn't understand art. You know, what's the use? You know, they wouldn't like that. So but actually, it's because Krishna being the sanctioner and all that, and the modes carrying out, it may be because we have the ego. So Krishna is pushing on that point. And as soon as we understand, yes, because I think I am the doer, therefore I'm getting this anxiety, like that, then we'll find that's removed. There's no problem, like that. So it's all those must be considered. But this point is very good. Prabhupada mentioned about the big temple here. He was saying, you know, if Westerners can't come up with something wonderful, what's the use of being born there where you're so active and so, you know, into doing big, big things, you know? Very good point. Anything else?
Why Jamarashi must be, you speak about Jamarashi, why Jamarashi must be here without living means, or yes, Jamarashi, he has only, he has dealings with a lot of people to come from his position.
Yeah, I understand.
So, and you talk about Jamarashi.
Yeah. Question is, does Yamaraj deal with all, you know, all living beings, or just specific ones, or only with devotees, or... So he doesn't deal with devotees. I mean, it's not in his court. You always see him sitting with devotees, sitting and discussing and philosophy and all that. But in his court, you come to judge, it's only non-devotees. Devotees are not judged by Yamaraj. That's all. So he only deals with those human beings that are non-devotees. But there's quite a few. Quite a few. So he's kept quite busy. Just on this planet, I forget, there's some statistic. Someone's dying every, you know, second or 3 seconds or something like that. So he has plenty to do. So he must have quite a few yamakas to take care of all that. Dwaita has a question here. He says about the animals. They have no karma. But we see some animal is very healthy and happy and another is suffering like anything. So the animal doesn't create karma. This is the point that was being made here. They're just living results of their karma that they created when they were humans. And so therefore, as a human, then they had the, let's say they had some mixed karma. So they've done an activity to become a dog. But there's also some pious activity there. So they're a very healthy dog. Right? Nice, fat, healthy dog like that. You know, everyone feeds them Mahaprasada. Like that. But then someone may not have that mix. And then it's just only, you know, bad news. So then they're an unhealthy dog with, you know, so much difficulties like that. So it's just, they're just suffering the results of what they did as humans. But otherwise, they get no, they're just doing what they're supposed to do. Yes.
They are getting karma, they're being the instruments of generating karma for others that are inflicting pain and suffering like that.
Yeah, that's also there, is that you have the aspect is the constant going on of the cycle of someone's done something to me, I do it to them. You know, so this lifetime, you know, I'm the human and they're the mosquito. And last lifetime, I was the mosquito and they were the human. So they squashed me that life. In this life, I get to squash them. So that's going on. At the same time, this is also free will of the living entity. At any moment, he can decide to squash a mosquito that had never squashed him. So in this way, he can start a new cycle like that. So it just means, you know, a few extra verses, mosquitoes. So that also is there. That's why it's very, very sinful also. Because then you're, you know, the it's not in the books. And you've just started something. It's not proper. Anything else? Yes.
Technical question. But in the beginning of the first one, the question he was asking just before is where is the planet situated? Is it within the universe, in the earth, somewhere else? And in the first one describes in the beginning that it's just above the Gala ocean and below the planetary system. But from other descriptions we hear that the universe is within the Loki standard or Brahma Parita. So it appears to be like not the vision actually of the Gavadaksha Vishnu is laying on the Gava ocean. From these labels come from the stem. The universe is sometimes described as being within the stem of the lotus, which means like maybe the universe means the Gava ocean will be in the bottom of the stem. There's a few descriptions so that we have.
I wouldn't have a clue. Right? No, I think there's a description where it describes that these hellish planets are, I think even Patal is so far down in the universe that you can see the white of Ananta's hoods. Like that. So instead of having blue sky, you have white sky. But they're so low that that's what they see. I'm not sure if they're looking up or down, but whatever it is. That they're seeing the white of Ananta. But exactly how that works about between the inside the lotus stem and outside, I'm not quite exactly sure. The main point is it's just they're below the sphere of the normal cycle. It means the cycle of samsara goes from Patal up to Brahmaloka. So the hellish regions are outside of that. They're below that in which the living entity is punished before he's put back into that cycle. You know, just like you have your normal sphere of activities, generally if there's some chastisement or punishment, you're taken out of that normal sphere and in a different atmosphere, then you're either chastised or punished or giving some, you know, reformatory work or something you're given. But the atmosphere is generally a little different than your normal. So they're taken out of the normal sphere and put there. Then after that, then they're put back into this 14 planetary systems, you know, where then they can carry on with their karma like that. So this is like extracurricular, you know. You have your karma where you're going to be embodied and suffer or enjoy the results of your work. But this is the sinful things that are punished here. The punishment, and then after what you're given.
actually it seems that there's two forms of punishment. There's the punishment within the hellish situation, and then there are other punishments that take place in the embodied situation. In our embodied life, we're still suffering and enjoying according to our karma. These are like, is there some the hellish suffering there on top of that?
Yeah, means is we've done something wrong. So then that takes some correction. Then after that corrective measures, then we are given the fruits of that kind of work. So let's say the fruit of a particular work is you end up as a tree, let's say. So you get that fruit, but that sinful activity, because you are a human, one should know better, one has the sense, so then it carries a punishment that goes along with it to try to correct the mentality. You know, just like, let's say, you've done something, so then the tax people take away so much, you evaded taxes, so they put a fine, and they take away a big amount of money. Then after that, then you continue in your life, but now with no money. So kind of both aspects are there, you know. So one is specifically for the reformatory, direct reformatory purpose. And the other is just you get the results. That's what you wanted this, that's what you got, you know, and get what you pay for. So both are there. In other words, the what we're getting in the material, what we know is our material sphere of activities, that's the light side. The heavy side goes on in the hellish planets. So generally, no one ever gets what goes on in the hellish planets. You can't, because there it's the subtle body. So they can do so many things to you so, you know, constantly. You know, they can throw you off a cliff, you know, 500 times, you know, because, you know, so the material world only happened once, you know, you have to go through 50 bodies maybe, you know, for that. But here, they do it all at the same time. You remember the last one. It's definitely a more, it makes a greater imprint, you know, like that. Something too. Something too. Understand. The devotee, the purpose of, basically the purpose of the descriptions are, you know, like the principle of a lock keeps honest people honest. Thieves doesn't stop. So the hellish description of hellish planets isn't so much for the sinful people. Generally, though it works, it can be explained in a direct and graphic enough way, like Narad Muni, you know, did for Prajina Barhishat, and also for Dasaratnakar, who became Valmiki. Then they were able to understand what was going on and they changed. But otherwise, most, they just don't, somehow it doesn't mean anything, really. It doesn't soak in. But it's more to keep pious people pious. And then for the devotee, he can understand what he would be going through, but Krishna has saved him from this. So all that has been removed. And then Krishna just keeps a little bit, a touch of the prarabdha karma, or the fruit, just so we remember we're in the material world, we don't forget. So what we're actually receiving is very mild. Maybe a little more severe, but maybe connected with an offense or that. But otherwise, generally, Krishna is reducing it very greatly. And in such a way that we can still remember him nicely, and it can help us advance our Krishna consciousness. But all that hellish side is removed. So as we go through these descriptions of the hellish planets, we can think which things we've done, and that's what we'd be going for. Krishna so kindly has freed us from that. And then this can help make us humble, help make us, you know, attached to, you know, serve Krishna, take advantage of the process, and be, you know, more fixed, more determined in our devotional activities. And here, Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srimad Prabhupada ki, Jayata.